Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 6 days to midterm elections now, and here's the basic dynamic of the battle. Democrats are counting on a wave of public unrest to sweep Republicans out. Republicans are counting on a hyper-sophisticated turn-out-the-vote campaign to squeak their team back in. John Kerry gaffes aside, the polls all show the GOP in big trouble. But Karl Rove's prayer for an ace in the hole is database-driven micro-targeting of potential voters. The GOP knows where you live, where you shop, what you buy, what magazines you read, how you worship, how to push your intimate personal buttons. And they're pushing right now. Up next on Point, the deciding clash, the wave versus the turnout machine on Election Day. Joining me today from Washington is Tom Hamburger, investigative reporter for the Los Angeles Times. He's been traveling the country covering key congressional races. He's also co-author with Peter Walston of One Party Country, the Republican Plan for Dominance in the 21st Century, a very close look at how the GOP has organized for battle. Tom Hamburger, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks. Good to be with you, Tom.
And with us from Minneapolis, Minnesota, is Lawrence Jacobs, professor of political science at the University of Minnesota, director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance there. Lawrence Jacobs, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
And with me in the studio, Jack Beattie, On Point News analyst. Jack, good to have you right here.
Hello, Tom. Hello to our guests.
Okay, we've got a clash of styles here, though both parties are trying this now. Everybody says the Republicans are way ahead on this micro-targeting turnout machine. So, Tom Hamburger, let me come first to you with the big question. I'm looking here, page one, Wall Street Journal today. Latest poll, NBC Journal, says voters want Democrats rather than Republicans to control Congress by 52% to 37%. A 15-point margin matches the widest spread they've ever found on this question in a Journal NBC poll. Can that kind of big overall lead be overcome by Karl Rove's ace in the pocket, by micro-targeting?
Well, that's a pretty tall order to overcome it. And we think at this point that Karl Rove's strategy and the strategy of the RNC is to try to limit their losses in such a difficult environment. And there are signs, at least, that they are battle ready and that they're prepared to use micro-targeting and other tools in their arrows in the quiver to staunch this what seems to be an overwhelming Democratic tide.
So they're gonna fight the wave. I mean, right now we see just in the last 24 hours the huge blow up over John Kerry's comments and President Bush responding. So they're playing this sort of big message game at the same time. But we want to dig in on this micro targeting and the turnout machine. Describe it for us. Here we've got databases that they've collected on individual Americans, millions of them, with voting histories, age, address, marital status, but also, as you report, consumer habits, vehicle ownership, magazine subscription, church membership, hobbies, major purchases, even whether a household prefers bourbon over gin. Apparently, Republicans drink bourbon and Democrats more likely to drink gin. Wow, how much do they know about whom?
Well, Tom, what the Republicans are doing is picking up, as they've done in decades past, picking up on the latest innovations employed by the business community to find out how to market their candidates. And consumer data is now widely available. People know this who are selling everything from Lexus automobiles to baby aspirin. Mm. When you go to the Safeway store or your favorite grocery store, you're likely, if you're if you join their frequent buyer program, you are agreeing to turn over your data to a vast database that can then be sold to those who are interested in marketing anything.
So the Republicans have that. They own it.
That's correct. For several cycles now, really since 2000, they have been collecting this kind of data. It's not just the consumer data. They've also mined swept the publicly available databases to learn not just what kind of car you own, but how long you own it, what house you live in and what the square footage is, if you live in an apartment or a condo, whether you have call waiting or and what magazines you subscribe to.
And what can they do with all that detailed information? What does it amount to in political terms? What do you turn it into?
Well, there are several things, and let me clarify here. Mm. Microtargeting refers to this specific technique of developing algorithms based on this data, which is segmented, run through databases, and used to determine probability. That is, someone who, as you mentioned earlier, drinks bourbon, maybe drives a certain kind of car, Ford Mercury is high on the list, subscribes to gun and ammo, and other categories, are a percentage, give a percentage likelihood that they're going to vote Republican in a given race.
So with
and
limited resources, it's more profitable to go after that particular voter. They're more likely to come your way if you're the GOP.
That's correct. One of the things that it does is change the way in which campaigns have been traditionally run. You know, the way that it used to work is you would do precinct organizing, mm-hmm. and you would concentrate your energy in those precincts in which you had the higher percentages of turnout likely to go your way. Mm-hmm. So Democrats concentrated on urban precincts where they found Democratic registrations were up at 70 or 80%. Republicans the same, going to suburban and exurban precincts. What microtargeting allows you to do is to find voters who are likely to go your way, and you can pitch specific niche messages to them.
Well, to describe that for us, does that mean that, that the campaign is kind of tailored to each individual or each category, that
that's
it's not
exactly
all one message we're hearing anymore?
That's exactly what's going on. You know, Karl Rove, who, remember, started his career as a direct mail guy, understands how to motivate people. And the most effective way Republicans have learned, and they've learned it from the success of Democrats and organized labor in the late 90s, is to approach people individually, preferably by someone that they know, with a carefully tailored message that speaks to their concerns.
For
Can
example,
I give you one example?
Yeah.
For example, we found a met a woman in Ohio named Felicia Hill, an African-American woman who's married to a United Automobile Worker Union member. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, the Republicans would not have bothered contacting Felicia Hill. After all the demographics suggest she's likely to vote Democratic. And in fact, in every presidential election in the past when she had voted, she'd voted Democrat. In 2004, though, the Republicans used microtargeting to learn a bit more about Ms. Hill. And what they learned was that she sent her children to private schools. Mm-hmm. She subscribed to golf magazines. Mm-hmm. She had previously signed petitions favoring an end to abortion.
So the phone rings, and it's a Republican who understands this as a different kind of African-American wife of a union member.
Exactly. And in fact, people in her area contacted her. The pitch that was most resonant with her was one that they started with, which was school vouchers, as something the Republican Party favors, and which would provide public funding essentially for private schools. This resonated with Ms. Hill, and she said that for the first time in 2004, she felt that the Republican Party was talking to her about things that she cared about. And as she put it, for the first time in my life, I felt as though it was a place where I might be comfortable.
So ka-ching for the GOP in this particular story. But let me ask you, Tom, if everybody and their brother in the commercial world has access to all this data now, why is this seen as a Republican province? We know the Democrats are doing some of it, but why is this seen as the big Republican advantage? Why aren't Democrats doing it just as well?
Well, there has been an almost universal acknowledgement that this microtargeting technique works. It's useful not only in the sort of probability area, that is, finding likely voters who will support you, but it can also define or provide direction for your campaign. If I can just provide one other example, one of the things that those looking at the probability numbers realized in Ohio was that a certain group of Orthodox Jews, particularly those who'd recently emigrated from Russia, had an extraordinary likelihood, fondness for President Bush. And so in 2004, the Republicans staged rallies, perhaps for the first time in history, conducted solely in Russian in the Orthodox Russian Jewish neighborhoods of Cleveland. And as you know, this advantage was credited, and in our book, One Party Country, we believe it's the case that in Ohio, using these techniques helped the Republicans boost their turnout and beat the Democrats at a great game where they were traditionally, where they traditionally reigned, which was voter turnout.
Tom, stand by it. Lawrence Jacobs, how do you see it then? Is this the election that will disprove the value of micro-targeting and this turnout machine? Is the wave so big that it swamps it? Or, you know, Karl Rove says, we're still going to win this. And he points to this as one of the big ways. How? Why?
Well, I think the you know, the waves coming in, it matters how high they are. If this were a normal election, even a normal midterm election, you might see an incumbent facing, you know, a wave that might be, let's say, 4 or 5 feet high. And I think what Karl Rove and the Republican National Party have put together would handle that. But we're looking at something we haven't seen in at least a dozen years. And across a whole number of indicators, you're seeing a tidal wave, a tsunami heading to water, towards land. And it hasn't abated over the last 6 to 9 months that we've been tracing it. We keep saying, well, there's plenty of time. But if anything, the wave has grown. So the point here is, I think the way you evaluate this is not, do the Republicans hold the House? I don't think that's going to happen. But do they hold down the losses? So rather than a sweep of, you know, let's say a 30 or 40 Democratic majority, they hold it down to 10. That would be success. And if they're able to keep the Senate to a tie or a 1 or 2 vote Republican majority, that's also success. Mm-hmm. So what we're talking about is ways in which you minimize what is a year that is shaping up as really politically disastrous for the Republicans.
Jack Beatty, throw out the megaphone, bring in the personal line to each individual voter. This is a new era here we're talking about.
A new era, but also bring in the life preserver, because here comes the wave. And, you know, it's made up of many things. There's what political scientists call the presidential penalty, the proclivity of voters to take seats away from the president at midterm. Didn't happen in 98, didn't happen in 2002. Mm. There is the factor of presidential popularity. The worse he is, the worse his party is. Bush is about where Harry Truman was in 1950, when Harry lost 28 seats.
I want to take us right into the trenches in this big dynamic. Joining us now from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, is Mindy Finn. She is Director of New Media and Political Technology for Senator Rick Santorum's campaign there. She's former Deputy Director of the Republican National Committee's e-campaign. Mindy Finn, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay, I'm looking at an aggregate of the latest polls. They show Rick Santorum down more than 13% in the face of his Democratic challenger, Bob Casey. So what have you got going on the e-marketing voter turnout side that might affect the outcome?
Well, you know, as you alluded to before, Republicans are using micro-targeting extensively in all their campaigns across the country. They did in 2004, I would say, you know, not about probably about 20% as much as they are this year, with great effect to reelect the president and to reelect Senate and House candidates across the country, and we saw successes there. And then this year, you know, we're putting that into action even more. And you know, in 2004, micro-targeting data was available 2 months before Election Day. We've had access to this data for about 8 or 9 months now, and have been fine-tuning our plans for getting mail on their issues to voters that care about those issues, to getting automated calls to voters that care about those issues, for people to stop by their door on the issues that we know that they care about. And I think it will make a huge difference on Election Day.
Mindy, take us into how this works. You're looking at a screen and it's got a list of voters or a particular voter. What do you know about that voter? And let's say in the Rick Santorum campaign, how might you look at fine details of that voter's consumer profile or their, you know, the things they own or read or where they worship? How might you or do you use those to then target that voter?
Well, you know, on the campaign side, we don't necessarily look at their consumer data, you know, what magazines they buy, what cars they drive.
They're pre-sorted for you mean, at RNC
yeah,
Central?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk about the tactics a little bit and how that data comes to be. I mean, what happens is a survey is conducted, like a general poll, you know, that we hear about all the time, to find out what issues move the sample that's polled and what candidates they support. It's a very extensive survey, more than, you know, your regular poll, but it's a survey. And then based on the results of that poll, the consumer data on the individuals who are surveyed is assessed, and you create profiles of people based on that consumer behavior. So you say, okay, you know, this person supports President Bush. They voted in 2 out of the last 4 elections. They're a mother of 3. They buy this magazine. They drive this car.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look for other people across the general population who have those same consumer habits, and you make assumptions about what political candidates they support and what issues drive them.
And then when you approach those individual voters, is the message tailored to the profile segment that they're part of?
Absolutely. Our entire mail plan and our entire auto call plan is based on micro-targeting. You know, just some numbers for you is that, you know, in previous elections, say even 2000, when President Bush first ran for president, about 40% of the total vote, the total votes for President Bush.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the total votes at the end of the day, at the end of the election, 40% were pre-identified. They said, we know these people are going to vote for President Bush, mostly based on hard identification by calling people and survey them, by stopping by their doors. By
Mindy, let me ask you, let's take Rick Santorum. He is famous for his opposition to abortion. Now, let's say you target a woman in the suburbs who may be for choice on abortion, but you spot her as someone who's worried about, I don't know, national security or other issues. Then can you come to her with a Santorum message that hits those buttons but ignores abortion as an issue, for example?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the past, she might have gotten, say 5 years ago, even 4 years, even 2 years ago, she would have gotten a piece of mail that covered a range of issues because we wouldn't have known we could just target her on security, for example. And now she'll receive a piece of mail to her house that highlights the great differences in security between Senator Santorum and his opponent.
How do you look at this? Is this honest? Or is this manipulation of individuals? I mean, can you kind of hide part of a candidate from them and just expose the part that they might be amenable to?
I don't think it is. In fact, I think it really personalizes politics. I think, often with all the clutter, especially the clutter now, it's, the airwaves and with the Internet, things are getting even more cluttered, the amount of messages we get per day. And it's important, for people to remember when they go to the polls, what issue do I care about most? And when they have information on that issue, they can make a choice without all the clutter that's out there.
And how much difference can it make? Can you pull this out? Karl Rove says, has said, we're not going to lose Congress. Do you believe that on the basis of a turnout machine? What about Santorum down 13-plus points? Can he pull it out on the basis of this machine?
Well, I don't think you can. Microtargeting doesn't work miracles. The voters still have to be there on a general survey. But it certainly is worth, several points. We'll see. It's never been used to the great extent that it's going to be this year. It's a 6 year of a second term, a 6 year of a 2 term president. History shows that there is sort of an itch for change. And, you can see that with sort of the struggle that Republican incumbents are having across the country. But I don't think that, if not every single Republican wins across the country, I don't think that's time to say that these new techniques and micro-targeting doesn't work. I mean, I think you look at your successes and, we've known that it's worth several points. How many points is yet to be seen?
So a tough time, maybe a tough audience, but a kind of brave new world, so to speak, emerging here. Mindy Finn with the Rick Santorum campaign, head of political technology there. Mindy, thanks a lot for joining us from Pittsburgh.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Wow, there's a picture. Lawrence Jacobs, what do you make of politics when we go to this, this new technique? I mean, Mindy's saying it's grown kind of exponentially in what Republicans are doing with it. Just in this race, does it fundamentally change politics as we've known it?
Well, I think it's an incremental change. It's a culmination of really a century-long effort away from a kind of geographic-based campaigning that's based on precincts and parts of cities or parts of states to this much more individualized that is married up with this terrifically precise information technology. It's the same thing that's happening with all sorts of consumer products, bars of soap, hair products.
But is it good? Is it honest? Or does it lead to a kind of mass manipulation away from big positions, big truths commonly understood?
Well, I think it's, politics is always about framing. you're always telling a story. You go back to the all sorts of elections. Every election is about which team wins out and how it frames an election and how it mobilizes its forces.
But now a candidate can frame him or herself 16 different ways depending on the audience. And no doubt, as Mindy says, they will and do.
Yeah, of course. But here's the key thing to remember. This is what the campaigns are doing. But we live in a free society in which there's multiple and competing sources of information every day with the Internet and the blogs and alternative media. That information is proliferating from its sources. Plus, you have the opposing candidate. So the Santorum campaign is micro-targeting all out. But there's all this other information. Just look at the front page today. You've got stories about Iraq going on, the effort of the president to focus on the economy, gay marriage, in the New Jersey decision, all that is being swept up and swept under. So there's the campaign effort. That's always been there. But it's just, another addition. It's a significant addition. But there's this much bigger information environment out there that prevents the kind of Orwellian manipulation that, all of us would worry about. But I don't see that as happening.
Maybe. But a new world aborning here. Let me let our listeners into the conversation from Springfield, Virginia. Mark is calling. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling to you to talk to you about what's going on here in Virginia's 11th district.
Okay.
Tom Davis, who's our Republican incumbent, is running as a moderate against his Democratic opponent, Andy Hurst.
Okay.
And he sent me a mailer which shows that he's a moderate and talks about all the pork he's bringing to the district. But he sent my neighbor, who is on the other side of a lot of issues from mm-hmm. me, a flyer which characterizes him as an extremist because he's a lawyer who used to defend criminals.
You mean as and celebrating his extreme conservatism for your neighbor or not?
Oh, no. He says that Andy Hurst is an extremist and should be voted against because he helps people with their Sixth Amendment rights to counsel.
So how do you figure this, Mark? Is it because you shop at Target and your neighbor shops at Walmart and bingo, they've got you pegged?
I don't know how he picked me out. I know that I've taken stands and are members of organizations that show that I'm an environmentalist and a moderate, and I think that probably my neighbor has done other things. But however it is, I think it's very troubling because what it does is it means that people like me don't get a chance to criticize Mr. Davis when he's taking a stand that I think is abhorrent.
Mm, fascinating. Mark, thank you for calling. Tom Hamburger, does this pick apart the kind of common conversation? Mark can't even talk to his neighbor about the same candidate on the same basis because they're given two different songs.
Well, it's true that what you're seeing, the example that your caller refers to is certainly an example of micro-targeting, and it is just the way it's working now in congressional races across the country. We've heard one even in Minnesota's 6th District where the Republican candidate has told us they are micro-targeting not only down to the individual household, but they know they can identify those households, for instance, in which there's a split on a big issue like abortion or right to life and change the message for that particular household or even individuals within the household. So yes, we're seeing that. The question is, does this override the sort of national conversation or the regional conversation about big issues? I'm not sure that it does, because I think those traditional conversations mm-hmm. go along in the background. What's happening here is a sort of, I think it's an incremental change. It's a marketing advance. If I can just jump in with one quick point.
Mm.
We see that the way that Republicans see this, and your guest on the line from Pennsylvania pointed this out, micro-targeting is a tool. It's another tool in the toolbox, and it can yield a few percentage points, meaning it's useful in very close races. Karl Rove, of course, liked this very much, and it was an important tool because the nation's been so evenly divided recently.
Mm-hmm.
Its effectiveness, though, is not so great if there is, as Lawrence Jacobs referred to a moment ago, a tidal wave, a tsunami that overwhelms everything. In a race where a candidate is 13 points behind, a few percentage points, this enormous effort, isn't likely to make the difference. The thing that gives Republicans hope at this point is that while there seems to be a tsunami of public opinion mm-hmm. running against the president, against the war in Iraq, control of Congress comes down to dozens of individual races that are very, very close, particularly in the Senate.
Exactly.
And micro-targeting is an advantage that could determine, say, control of the Congress.
Politics won or lost at the margins, and yet the margin gets big if the wave is big. Ann's calling from Belmont, Massachusetts. Hi, Ann, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have no doubt that Mr. Rove's micro-marketing turnout machine is effective, otherwise they wouldn't be using it. But I think that Mr. Rove is using this to frame another story. I think it's a smoke and mirror device right now to point us toward his cover story that is going to be used to explain why a lot of these very close, very important races get switched toward the Republicans. And I think it's a cover story that is going to be used to cover shenanigans, which is going to be used in a lot of different races, a lot of different types of shenanigans. I think.
So if the polls don't turn out in the event, as the pre-election day polls suggest, maybe the micro-targeting becomes Ann suggesting. Here's a lot of skepticism, Jack. Ann suggesting that this is a cover story. Well, sure, but the polls missed are under the covers, house-by-house micro-targeting, and here's the result.
And we did a show earlier this week on some of these issues about ballot access and mm-hmm. machines and so on. But, you know, on this matter of Rove, he had two ways he could have gone once he got into the White House. They could have tried to expand their base through persuasion. through trying to get independent voters, or they could have tried to maximize getting out their base. They chose the latter. And in a race where macro factors are at work, war, in all five congressional elections held in war, the average seat loss for the incumbent party has been 36 seats. That's a historical tide. So he's fighting that, and they haven't tried to persuade. So, you know, for example, in Ohio, he could have lost that election by 60,000 votes in that state, and Bush would have lost the presidency, yet won the popular vote by 3 million. Mm-hmm. That's what a base election does. And the base election overlooks, and the micro-targeting, people you already know, overlook the people who are persuadable, the independents. They are breaking for the Democrats. In 2002, they broke by 3 points. They're breaking by 16 now. Those are the folks, if they vote, who will decide the election. So Rove has sort of put himself and his party in that box of micro-targeting the base. But in elections like this, it may not matter.
Lawrence Jacobs, but isn't micro-targeting maybe a way for Karl Rove to creep out of that box of the base? Because he can go into those independents and in the turnout machine front, find those who may be susceptible to the GOP message. I mean, is this a way out of the box, Jack describes, of base first?
Well, I don't think it is. I mean, you just look at these numbers. We're now seeing a national security foreign policy as high as it's been since the midterm election of 1966. Usually it's a meat and potatoes domestic front issue. Iraq is dominating. The president's approval rating is about a third on Iraq, and his disapproval rating is about, 60 to 65%. I mean, this is just a phenomenal rejection, and it's become a referendum on President Bush, where usually you see midterm congressional elections with local personalities, state issues. This has become kind of a 1994 situation where it's really a referendum on the president. I think Karl Rove's strategy could well backfire. He is known as a master who controls the situation and is brilliant. And yet I think the outcome here is going to lead to a lot of questioning along what the lines of Jack is talking about neglecting the independent voter, and also about the terrible hit that the Republican reputation or name brand, if you will, has taken. We're seeing what looks to be, at least at this point, of a real shift away from the Republican Party, as many Americans, including Republicans, are kind of updating the running tally on how the parties are doing.
Tom Hamburger, you wrote the book One Party Country. Do you agree with this, or do you think this might be Karl Rove's way out of the box of base politics?
Well, it's true that Karl Rove has built a Republican machine that is designed in part to appeal to the base to win elections. And this 2006 midterm may indeed turn out to be a repudiation of that strategy. We're also seeing the strategy in part depended on a narrowly divided nation, and the strategy worked based on sort of slicing and dicing and dividing voters, if you will.
We're talking this hour about the battle to get out the vote next Tuesday, the Democrats' wave versus the GOP turnout machine and its micro-targeting. I'm joined in this hour by Tom Hamburger of the L.A. Times, co-author of One Party Country, the Republican Plan for Dominance in the 21st Century. Lawrence Jacobs is with us from the University of Minnesota. Jack Beatty's here. I want to go right to the front lines of this partisan battle. First, with a Republican campaign worker joining us from Davenport, Iowa, Luana Stoltenberg is with us. She's a mother, a pro-life activist. She's been active in the House race in Iowa's 1st District, calling voters to talk about that race, about pro-life issues. She's also helped with meet-and-greet party events. Luana Stoltenberg, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So here you are, working hard on the way to the midterm election. Are you on the phones in the streets every day at this point, Luana?
Well, a lot of us are every day, but some of us have jobs as well, so we try to do as much work as we can when we can get it done.
And give us a sense of how you know who to call. Who do you target? How do you target? Do you get a list from the county committee, the district committee, the RNC? Who gives you your marching orders?
Well, it depends on who we're working for. If we are working for, like, Mike Whalen, who is running for the 1st Congressional District in my district, we get a list from him, and we don't know where those voters are targeted from. We just get a list with the name and the phone number, and then different days we're giving different surveys, either to ask them who they would be voting for, if they wanted a yard sign. We're not doing that so much anymore. Mm-hmm. We only have a week, but just asking them questions and surveys.
And you get a script to go into with the people you're calling. Do you have an example of the kind of script you might read or communicate to someone on your list?
You know, I don't have a script right now on me, but it's been different phases of the race. When we started, we would start asking about issues, what was important to them, if they were for or against same-sex marriage, if they were for or against abortion. We would ask social questions like that. Then we started asking if they would be willing to put yard signs, and now we are getting right down to who are you going to support.
And when you get beyond the survey questions, asking them, is there a point at which you're campaigning to them, saying, I really think you ought to vote for Mike Whalen over Bruce Braley, the Democrat? Or, you know, do you reach out and say, do you need a ride to the polls? How intimate does it get there? How much are you pushing at this point?
This last 72 hours, we will be getting down to that. We will be asking if they need a ride to the polls. I don't think we're really going to be pushing them and trying to convince them to vote our way if they, you know, if they aren't in our camp already. I haven't seen a survey like that yet.
But the lists come down. They come down every day, and it sounds like you're all over it. Luana Stoltenberg in Davenport, Iowa, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Let me turn now to a Democratic operative out in the field. Joining us from Malvern, Pennsylvania, is Cynthia Sherbin, a mother, owner of a company that manufactures doll clothing. She's an activist with Move On and the Democratic Party. She's been helping the Democrats in Pennsylvania's 7th District by calling voters, coordinating poll readers and watchers, greeting party leaders who come to town. Cynthia Sherbin, thanks for joining us.
Hi, how you doing, Tom?
We're good. So you're looking at 10-term Republican incumbent Kurt Weldon there.
Yes.
Tight race with the Democratic challenger Joe Sestak. How's it look?
Well, I just saw today that the Philadelphia Inquirer indicated that the Republican Party has pooled some of its campaign funds for Weldon, and that with the possibility that they have given up on this race and will use that money in other tight races, which is a good sign for us. So I'm very happy about that. Tom, I would love to make a comment about the micro-targeting and what the damaging effect it has on us. I think it's successful in getting out the vote, whether the Democrats or Republicans are doing that. But as everyone knows, that this administration is described as all about politics and not about policy. And as a result, many people have left the administration because of the fact that it is so much about politics and there really is no policy. It's always trying to tailor-make it to see how do the polls or the wins of the polls go.
So how does that relate to micro-targeting, Cynthia?
Well, and I want to bring that back, too. So if you're getting the folks to come out to vote for a particular candidate, angry because they think their guns are going to be taken away or angry because they think that women aren't don't have the privilege to make decisions about their own bodies, what's happening is you have a Congress and a president that no longer represents the people, and that's my point. So perhaps you can work on getting folks out to the polls to vote, but ultimately, if you only have 38% of the folks voting to begin with in this broad electorate for this congressional race, midterm elections, and the results are each area having individual congresspersons or senators, like our state senator Santorum, not able to relate to us as constituents, not, you know, doing the job of representing us, but rather a tight-knit GOP agenda.
But hasn't it always boiled down to the individual in the voting booth, Cynthia? I mean, hasn't that always been the case?
I think so, but my point is that if you're just getting people riled up to come out for a particular component of a micro-targeted race. My point is you may get people angry about one issue, but others who are affected and perhaps not politically savvy or maybe overwhelmed with the work that they do and the responsibilities they have to not be able to look through all this madness that a sophisticated program is being employed on them.
So where's the big picture? Where's the common ground? Let me just ask you, in terms of the Republican machine, can you feel the sophistication of it? Do you feel disadvantaged in this election season?
No. I think it's run its course, and I almost agree with one of your callers that called in suggesting that perhaps some things might be happening in the voting process with the HAVA, Help America Vote Act, perhaps another Orwellian speech program, to support this machinery. But no, I think that the Americans are waking up. I mean, between the war, between civil liberties being abused, between being wedge issues. I don't like being a wedge issue. You know, gay people don't like being a wedge issue. I, as a woman, I have three daughters. I think that my daughters should have access to birth control. I think they should have access to choice, et cetera. So, no, I think that the tsunami represents the fact that this government is out of touch with the people.
Cynthia, we hear it. The Democrat on the front line, Cynthia Sherbin, working it, and we hear the message that you're no doubt giving there in Pennsylvania's 7th District. Cynthia Sherbin, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
We've got so many callers who want to join us. Let me go to Suzanne in Ames, Iowa. Hi, Suzanne. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. Anyway, I think this illustrates one of the biggest weaknesses of our culture, that we're kind of lazy. We're easily marketed and manipulated. And like your last commentator was just saying, it emphasizes some of the laziness and weakness. And how far can this go? Is this going to be, you know, a big, is this going to devastate our economy because and our democracy, because it's going to just continue to be a marketing process rather than a political process? And I'm an economics student here at Iowa State, and one of the basic laws of economics is that you know, well-organized corporations and lobbyists will get their ideals realized more than, you know, what's in the best interest of the common public, simply because of organization. So if our political machine has become, you know, basic marketing, you know, we really are emphasizing the weaknesses of this culture rather than strengthening it and strengthening our democracy. And I wondered, I asked your commentators if they think there's any hope that we can overcome this, or that this will be recognized and maybe there'll be a stronger movement towards campaign reform and getting some of the money out, or we've already gone too far where there's no turning back.
Suzanne, you raise interesting questions. Let us pick it up. Lawrence Jacobs, what about it? I mean, Suzanne is saying, look, you know, marketers know you can market anything. You can market any brand of soap with the right techniques. Is that corrosive to politics, or has politics always been the marketing of ideas and interests?
Well, just to take the marketing metaphor, you get a product out there that works. You see a lot of other people all of a sudden racing to that marketing niche. We're already seeing the Democratic Party trying to catch up. I think it's going to take them one or two election cycles to do it. But they're going to have their market targeting down. They've learned their lesson. You're seeing individual presidential hopefuls in the Democratic Party putting together their own capacities. And I think most importantly, not to forget, micro-targeting is one part of a very complex, multifaceted information environment. This is not the only information that's reaching voters. And the truth of it is, just look at how dominant Iraq is, despite President Bush's efforts, despite the marketing targeting efforts to shift on to other issues that would be divisive and would play to the Republican candidates' advantages.
Right. So facts are stubborn things, as Ronald Reagan would say. But Jack Beattie, you also hear Suzanne's question. Is there a point at which we just get marketed to instead of spoken to as citizens? Is there a difference between marketing and politics at the end of the day, Jack?
Well, I think there is. You know, closing the sale, I suppose you can use the same sort of words, but I think finally politics does get to big things. It gets to visions of the common good. And I think just talking to voters of all stripes, people, you know, ask, is this good for the country? They don't ask the same question they do about a product. And I think that element of civic seriousness still surrounds voting and picking candidates. And, you know, she brought up the issue of campaign finance reform. There is a strong reform current in the Republican Party. 63% in one poll of Republicans favor congressional funding of campaigns. Now, that's really something.
Yes, but for what? Lawrence Jacobs says eventually Democrats are soon. They've got some already. They're going to have a lot more. Everybody may be doing this. Let me get a call from Lexington, Massachusetts. Duncan is on the line. Hi, Duncan.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Yeah, in this election season, I found out that I am designated as a super voter, meaning that, you know, I go out and vote in, you know, all the elections.
You're always there. Oh, good and faithful citizen. That makes you a super voter. Okay.
Right. And I think my demographics are unlikely to make me a candidate for any of Karl Rove's calls, but I don't like getting called by anybody. you know, I really resent it, you know, on the Saturday or the Sunday before the election, you know, to get an automated call, you know.
Whoever it is, it sort of creeps you out to be identified in this way. Is
exactly.
that right? Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
You know, I want to go out and, you know, do my research and vote for the people I, you know, want to vote for. And if I don't know about, you know, somebody or a particular race, you know, I don't vote in that race. But, you know, I really think that, you know, people have to take, you know, responsibility and don't just take someone's word for it that, you know, the candidate you're being sold is the right one for you.
Duncan, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. I want to try to get to a couple more. Let's get one from Savannah, Georgia. John is calling. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hello. I basically wanted to ask, or this is my feeling, is that this is pushing us more from red and blue states to red and blue neighbors, that this is actually dividing us more when they can actually set the topic, like the one caller said, to pro-abortion and then or against abortion, mm-hmm. and the next neighbor never even mentioned that. It's actually dividing us more. Instead of having us community-oriented, it's dividing the community. It's actually going into the community and dividing neighbor and neighbor.
Red and blue neighbors. It's a great phrase, John. Tom Hamburger, how about it? First of all, Duncan says, I feel too naked with this hyper-awareness of who each voter is, of who I am. And John in Savannah asks if we go from red and blue states to red and blue neighbors.
Well, I think let me present a contrary view on this, the sort of attack on micro-targeting and the techniques that both parties are using to get mm-hmm. voters to the polls. And that would be this. First, I'd acknowledge that there is some, there may be something that's creepy or even Orwellian about developing this sort of databases and information about voters and then targeting them, particularly with the annoying robocalls and so on. I understand that. But the thing that I'd credit, really, and speak of it differently than your callers and some of the commentators have, mm-hmm. broadly about these efforts, these are efforts to reach out to voters, to speak to individual voters about what candidates or parties know matters to them. Mm-hmm. The result has been to, at least in 2004 and in 2002, to see a slight uptick in voter turnout. I think this is probably, all told, a good for democracy, that it's positive and that this is a new development, a new sensitivity that campaigns, that political parties are revealing towards what voters really care about. And the results are told in the voter turnout statistics. And anything that we can do to get our miserable voter turnout numbers higher, I'd argue, is a good.
So it's as if Abe Lincoln could come and hang out on your porch and talk with you about your interests. You got that kind of positive spin on it?
Well, in part. I mean, I don't want to sugarcoat what's going on here. This is a marketing effort, but politics has always been about marketing. I don't think that micro-targeting necessarily overwhelms discussions about broader discussions about issues of broad community interest. I mean, part of what we're seeing this election is very much turning on the Iraq War. That's overwhelmed any micro-targeting that has to do with gay marriage or school vouchers or snowmobile riders.
But I guess the concern, Tom, may be, I mean, we've seen what's happened in the public discussion of issues, how manipulative that can be. Mm-hmm. I wonder if, you know, citizens are concerned that if you get off screen into a private one-on-one mechanized marketing conversation, it gets even more cynically manipulative because it's private.
Well, I'd argue that politics, the definition of politics is sometimes about big issues, as Jack Beatty said a moment mm-hmm. ago, but it's also about what individuals care about. There's a definition of politics I like, which is that politics is about how a group of people identify common problems and find ways to solve them. Well, if there are a group of people who send their kids to private schools, as the Republicans have discovered, who are concerned about ways to fund this and they want the democracy to respond, it's not a bad thing, I don't think, for the political party to, in a sense, find out who these people are, organize them as a political force, and reach out to them. How is that negative?
Jack, it may not swing this election, but it sounds like it's the future. Computers aren't going away. Databases aren't going away. The desire to win and speak to individual voters is not going away. One way or another, this looks a lot like the future.
It does, but there's another future trend, too, and that is the demographic patterning of red and blue. We've documented mm-hmm. this on the show. More and more Americans are moving blue Americans to blue districts, red Americans to red, and that suggests a larger demographic flow that may top all this, or may certainly complicates micro targeting.
Well, red, white, blue, and purple. we've got every color here, and the computer's cutting right through it with those individual messages. It's a fascinating picture. It may be the future. Tom Hamburger, co-author of One Party Country at the LA Times, thanks very much for being with us this hour.
Thanks, it's a pleasure.
And Lawrence Jacobs at the University of Minnesota. Professor Jacobs, wonderful to have you. Thanks for being here.
Good to be with you.
Jack Beatty, always good to have you.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.